going up to yonder, beyond the lights, neon, floor essence, my essence is something to ponder, your talent ain't something to squander, blessed and favored so highly, anointed and pointed I might be, this is that all that podcast featuring Kyrie.
Welcome back to another episode of the All That Podcast. I have a special guest on today, somebody who is a big deal. I have the chairman of the Harris County Democratic Party, which is the third largest county in the United States of America. And when you hear that title, you think that this guy is maybe 45, 50, 60. He's 30, which is crazy. So I'm here with Mr. Otis Evagaro. And yeah, we got a lot to talk about. Obviously, we're at you know, midterms, and actually this podcast will be out on the 8th.
Okay, correct.
So, you know what I mean? So, right on the election day. And so, yeah, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. You know, right now, you know, we're in the middle of early vote, making sure that we're getting out our people to vote. Thank you so much for having me on your show first and foremost.
Yes, sir.
That's really cool. All that. I like the name.
You like
that? I
really
like the name. Yeah. Yeah, it takes me back to when we were younger, Nickelodeon.
Yes.
All that.
Yeah. Hey, there it is.
So, yeah, no, thank you for having me on. And we're excited. We're enthusiastic. We're hoping that our people get out to vote and making sure that their voices are being heard.
Right. So I also see you have your Astros shirt on. Go Astros tonight. You know, got to get that win. Go up 2-1.
Absolutely.
So I always like to, you know, start because, like I mentioned in the introduction about you being so young. Like I'm 28. I'll be 29 in December, and like we're like same age, yeah. And you are like chairman of the Democratic Party. So I like to ask people. I like to go back.
Yeah.
Right. So. Was politics always a dream for you? Was somebody in your family maybe in politics? Or what sparked the interest to be in politics?
No, that's a fantastic question. And, mm-hmm. you know, my personal story, I always tell folks, you know, first and foremost, I was born in London, England. Mm-hmm. So I'm a dual citizen. It used to be God save the Queen, but, you know, she passed recently. So now I think I got to say God bless the king,
yeah.
And God bless America as well, too, being a dual citizen. And growing up, you know, I'd always watch the news with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it really started. I watched the news with my dad. I'd be 7-8 years old, going to class, talking about Bill Clinton and Yasser Arafat when I'm 7-8 years old.
Yeah.
And the rest of the students are looking at me like, what in the world are you talking about? And it's okay. I still watch my cartoons and my sports, so I was still able to connect.
Right.
But I kind of got the urge from there. And then fast forward in November 2008, there was a black man with big ears and a funny name like mine and was saying, yes, we can.
Right.
Right. And it allowed me to understand that I didn't just have to be an entertainer or an athlete or a showman. We can be the leader of the free world. And that was really important for me to see that representation come true. And again, like having the name Barack Obama, Otis Evagaro, you know, you can definitely get to different places. And so in 2008, I couldn't vote because I was still in high school. But in 2012, I volunteered for his campaign. Mm-hmm. 2016, I volunteered for Hillary Clinton's campaign as well, too. And I was the vice president of the College Democrats at the University of Houston. Go Cougs. And from there, I was able to intern, actually, at the Harris County Democratic Party.
Mm.
And so I got to learn a lot of the tricks of the trade, as they say. And was able to be the communications director. So I started off as an intern. Then the chair at the time, I guess she liked me a lot, kept me on. I was able to be the communications director. And then I also ran our coordinated campaign, which saw all of our judicial seats flip from Republican to Democrat in 2018. And then also we got a congressional seat in Lizzie Fletcher. We were able to flip County Commissioner's Court, where we have Lena Hidalgo as the judge, and mm-hmm. then also elected Adrian Garcia out in Precinct 2, the east part of Harris County. And then we also flipped two state House seats.
Wow.
And that's when I really got to thrive, because one of the House seats that we flipped is a House seat that I grew up in District mm-hmm. 135 to Northwest Harris County, the Jersey Village, Copperfield, Cypress Corridor there. And we flipped that seat. And so his name's John Rosenthal. And then after he won that race, he asked me to be his chief of staff. So I've actually been in Austin the past two sessions being his chief of staff. And then the opportunity to run for party chair came. And now we're here being
wow.
party chair and being John Rosenthal's chief of staff. So it's been a cool journey.
Wow. So for the average person out there
yeah.
that might not know what the chairman of Harris County Democratic Party, what that job title means. So can you kind of explain to us, like, what do you do? Like, what's the inner workings of your title?
Absolutely, absolutely. So first and foremost, I always remind everyone it's a volunteer position.
Mm-hmm.
You do get elected in the primary elections that happen in March. Your name is on the ballot. But the way I was elected, because the stepping down happened in between a term, it's two-year terms, our precinct chairs. And a precinct chair is pretty much an elected leader in what we call voting precincts. So really your neighborhood. It consists of like two or three neighborhoods. They go out and their job is to get out the base and talk to Democrats in their three or four neighborhoods. And so they got to choose and they selected me June 27th, 2021, I believe is the date.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where it's all started. And so for my job, what I'm supposed to do is making sure that we're getting our base to vote, making sure that we're getting Democrats in Harris County elected, making sure that we're getting them out to vote. And then also fundraising. We got to fundraise. You know, money, campaigns cost money. Making sure that we're spending money on programs that'll get Democrats elected up and down the ballot. And then also creating programs that support people, our volunteers, other folks, to make sure that they're getting out and helping people vote. And so it's been a fun journey. And that's in a nutshell of what I get to do as the chair. And then obviously, you know, there's the dinners and talking to folks and,
yeah.
And you know, making sure that they're rest of what we're doing around the county as well too, and then talking, maintaining a strong relationship with our elected officials that are Democrats, and then maintaining a strong relationship with the Texas Democratic Party as well too, our state party, and then also our national party as well.
Gotcha. So look, right now in Harris County, it's I want to get your thoughts on this, because I hear from a lot from the other side.
Yeah.
And if you go, you know, I work in and live in, I would say, a probably predominantly Republican area.
Okay.
And if you roll by, you see the signs, like, if you want to stop crime, vote Republican, and, you know, all this, and you see the commercials, right, about the crime and, you know, Lena's indictment and all this. So a lot of Republicans that I, you know, converse with or that I hear or see, one of their main issues or talking points, I guess, is crime. And they feel like, you know, the Democratic judges let out criminals, and those criminals that they let out ended up committing crimes against, or even murders. So what do you say? Because a lot of the blame has been put on Democrats for Harris County's spike in crime. So what is your rebuttal to that?
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate that Republicans are using people's pain in domestic violence, murders, assaults to score cheap political points when they know the truth and they know better. Number one, addressing public safety is a need every year. You know, our Democratic officials have done that. They've actually increased funding for law enforcement, but the other side won't tell you that. In fact, there's two county commissioners who refuse to show up to work that they're literally defunding the police. That's not my words. The Houston Chronicle actually had an article out about that.
Yeah.
When it comes to our Democratic judges letting out criminals, that's a lie. They're following the Texas state constitution. These are things that Republicans don't want to talk about and get into the wonkiness, right? Mm-hmm. It's the sound bites that get people going instead of actually talking about the process. The Texas state constitution affords people to have a right to bail. Our judges have to follow that law. Right. Otherwise, what's going to happen is they're going to be sitting in front of a judicial ethics commission getting filed judicial complaints and in violation of the law. They have to do that.
I actually had a judge say verbatim what you just told me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. This is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, we just came out of a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. The number in crime isn't just high in Houston. It's high everywhere across the country.
Right.
People were locked in their houses for years. We weren't taking care of mental health. We weren't taking care of the things that we normally do. We're so used to seeing each other outside of the sphere that helps our mental health. We haven't been able to do that. So crime has spiked everywhere across the country. Now, if you looked at Harris County and you look at Houston and you look at the recent numbers that have come out, crime is starting to decrease because of the investment that Democrats have made, whether it's research-based, whether it's quality of life investments. We don't talk enough about public housing. That helps. We don't talk about the minimum wage that's still at $7.25. Thank you, Republican state leadership. We don't talk about health care. We have the highest uninsured rate in the country. That hurts. We don't address mental health. I don't want to get all too far off the topic, but let's talk about Uvalde and what happened in Uvalde. Uvalde, you have a gunman who goes there and kills 19 students and another handful of teachers. Republicans were blaming mental health. What we weren't talking about was the fact that Governor Abbott cut $211 million in the month of April that was going to the department that controls mental health in the state of Texas. These are things that we're not making up. Mm-hmm. You can go Google and see for yourself. We also passed a law, open carry. You can't say that you support law enforcement and then you're going to let everyone in the state of Texas carry a gun over the age of 18 and then say we have a crime problem. Of course we have a crime problem when you're letting everyone around carry guns. Mm-hmm. We have to have honest conversations. Law enforcement went to Austin and testified against passing that bill. Law enforcement did. Mm-hmm. Not left-wing activists, not folks who are trying to take your guns, quote unquote, law enforcement. Don't tell me you back the blue and then you don't listen to them. And now we have open permitless carry laws across the state and now it's just run amok. So there are things that are happening that are contributing thanks to the GOP leadership in the state of Texas. And that's why we got to make sure that we get people out to vote, because it is not Democratic judges letting criminals out to go commit crimes, or Democrats are quote unquote defunding the police. We have increased funding for law enforcement. That is a fact. You can look it up anywhere.
Wow, that's interesting that you said that the law enforcement actually voted against, went to Austin to, wow. So what do you think is a key component to strengthening that relationship between the Democrats and law enforcement? Because it seems like, you know, Republicans always come off as the party, you know, for law enforcement, like law and order, like, you know,
right. That's
very, you know, their mantra, right? So it seems like, you know, we have, especially when the term defund the police came out, you know, there's a lot of like, whoa, like a lot of police officers are like, what the heck? Because the phrasing probably could have been a little better, but I was having a conversation with somebody. I was like, sure, the phrasing could have been better, but if you actually look at, you know, what they were talking about, it's not what you think.
Exactly.
So even like Lena, when she was trying to get I think $100 million for the law enforcement,
exactly, yep.
They booed her
yep.
because she, you know, but she's like, it's not my fault. The people not showing up.
Right.
You know, so how do you think that relationship can get better between law enforcement and the Democrats?
Well, I think we have to stop polarizing everything. That's number one. Mm-hmm. I think law enforcement and you know, we have conversations with cops who some of them do truly understand what we are trying to do. Mm-hmm. I think that they have leaders in law enforcement that try to politicize and mischaracterize things that are going on. Mm-hmm. In 2020, when Republicans were saying Democrats are trying to defund the police, go Google any record. There wasn't a Democrat in Texas who was running for office saying defund the police. That wasn't happening.
Right.
And also, too, the phrasing of it, and I've said this publicly, it could have been a lot better.
Yeah.
No one's asking to defund the police. What we're saying is that there's resources that could be allocated in different areas to free up police to go address violent crime, domestic violence, aggravated assaults, murders, things like that, rape, where we're trying to make sure that they're paying attention to that, where they're not getting calls to, you know, someone who's mentally ill and they're dealing with different challenges in their life, that we can have a social worker there to help them and walk them through. Mm-hmm. So that way we're not seeing folks killed for just simply being sick.
Right.
And that's what's really happening here. And it's nuance to this, right? But when the other side, when the right takes sound bites and they take sound clips and they say, hey, this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to defund the police. That's not true. That's not true at all. And even folks who were saying defund the police, they will tell you. There's websites that will tell you what they're asking for. Yes, there's some people who just believe that we shouldn't have police. And I don't agree with that. We should have cops that to help with violent crime and different things like that. And then taking some of those money and allocating those resources to better fund our education system. Mm-hmm. man, there is study after study after study that shows, especially black and brown kids, if they see a teacher that looks like them, or they're staying through third grade, through fifth grade, through eighth grade, the percentage of them committing a crime reduces significantly when you see that kind of investment.
Yeah.
So instead of trying to create a police state, let's actually invest money into education, raising the minimum wage, getting people insurance, getting affordable housing, things that help people's lives easier where they don't have to think that they have to resort to a life of crime, but there's a life that's made easier for them.
Right. I always say, like, a big talking point or is like black on black crime. And right. I always say that crime is linked to poverty,
right,
not race.
Right.
So if you look across the world, usually the places that have poverty have the higher
right.
crime rate. So I think it's kind of like we'll just keep going in a circle like, oh, let's put more police. Let's do this. You know, but they'll still be crying.
Right.
And the people won't get better. So I think the solution would be to do something about the poverty.
Right.
You know, so that's just me. So.
And to your point, can I also say this?
Yeah.
Especially when I hear black on black crime, white on white crime percentage is higher than black on black crime percentage.
But you never hear that.
You never hear that. Crime is about proximity. People don't drive 30 miles to go commit a crime.
Kill where you live.
You kill where you live. You steal where you live. You do these things because, again, poverty. You know, and you know, that's the conversations that we really need to be having is crime is about opportunity and proximity. It has nothing to do with, oh, I see a fellow black person, so let me go commit the crime to that person.
Right.
It's all about the area that you're in and the area that you're living in. And the other thing I also want to say is that don't tell me that you're tough on crime, but you're soft on gun reform. Gun safety reform, excuse me. You cannot be tough on crime but soft on gun safety reform.
Yeah.
There's no way, because guns are out here, ammunitions are out here, they're killing people at an unreal rate. Look at the countries that have some form of gun safety, gun control reform. Their murders are exponentially down than what is going on in the United States. This is not an attack on the Second Amendment. No one is saying you don't have the right to bear arms. But can we agree that everyone shouldn't be carrying an AK-47 or AR-15?
Right.
These are the weapons that are actually being used to mow down our future and kids in school.
Right.
So don't tell me that you're tough on crime, but you're soft on gun safety reform. It just doesn't square.
Right. What do you think? What is your rebuttal to people who say, like, criminals are going to be criminals regardless, and it's not about the guns per se, it's just about the people. What is your response to that?
Well, again, like I said, it's funny how in developed countries, Japan, Sweden, UK, Australia, New Zealand, all these countries that you have the freedom to bear arms, but there's background checks, which, by the way, 90% of Republicans agree on, that there should be some form of background checks when you're getting these weapons.
Right.
It's funny how those countries have those things and their numbers are down. Like, you can see the correlation. It's not rocket science. We see the numbers. These are data you can look up. You know, you hear all the time, you know, people don't kill people. Guns kill people.
Right.
Well, if that's the case, how come when the NRA was in Houston, they told those folks don't bring weapons? After coming off of mass shooting.
Oh, that's a good point.
Why is it that we're telling the people not to bring the weapons that are causing this?
Right.
We didn't tell the people to stay home. You still had the convention. If people are the ones killing the people, then why didn't you tell the people to stay home?
Right.
So, it you know, it's things like that where, again, it's just an easy soundbite to use when we're not being honest and genuine about it. And the reality is that the NRA, which is a big lobby group, the National Rifle Association, they have a stranglehold with the amount of money they can put into politics. And it scares the living daylights out of these folks who are Republicans and take their money because they think that they'll get primaried. And we've got to have honest conversations about what is going on and what these weapons are doing. Also, too, it's not just mass shootings. It's domestic violence. You know, when we talk about guns, we're not just talking about Uvalde and Sandy Hook and Santa Fe. We're talking about the everyday crime that you'll see in a home where a gun is being used against someone's partner. That you've seen story after story about that here in Houston or across the country. So that's why it's important to make sure that we're having some kind of check on who is buying guns and who's buying ammunition. It's very important.
Just common sense.
Common sense.
So, okay, let me get to this. So I am an African-American, and I feel like from, you know, conversations I had have with people, with our people, conversations I see online, I feel like a lot of us are getting frustrated with the Democratic Party because we feel like that they have had our vote since forever, right? But we don't really see any change in our neighborhoods for the most part, right? We're still in poverty. We're still struggling. We're still, you know, all this. So what do you think about the state of the Democratic Party and African Americans? Because we are very, like, the black vote can, like, tilt. Right. You know, it's very important. That's why, you know, people spend time on trying to get it. So what do you think about that relationship between the Democrats and the black population?
Look, the number one thing I'm going to say is that, look, it's in the Constitution itself. We're not perfect. We're always striving to be more perfect, right? And look, the Democratic Party, we always will have issues because we need to be better always. Mm-hmm. There's always nuance to everything, right? Social media wasn't around 20 years ago. Now it's here, so we have to adapt.
Right.
You know, there's just different things. Solar panels weren't here 30 years ago. Now we're adapting, right? There's all these nuanced things that are happening. Mm-hmm. What I will say is that the Democratic Party is still the best party for black people in this country. And also, too, we also have to have a real conversation about why things aren't going the way it's going. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the state of Texas. I don't want to talk about any other state. I just live in Texas, so I can only speak to what I know about in Texas. Texas has the highest number of African Americans of any other state in the country. That most black people live in Texas if you're dealing with the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Let's look at who's been under rule for the past 20 years. It's Republicans. Look at what happened. Let's use COVID as an example. Mm-hmm. Lena Hidalgo is our county judge. She wanted a mask mandate. She wanted to keep our area safe. We knew COVID was affecting black and brown people the most, particularly black people. We had mask mandates. We had social distance. We had all these things. What happened? We had a Republican governor strip her of all of her powers. That's what you're seeing all across the country, particularly in Democratic hubs, is you're in these red states who know that these big urban areas are full of black, brown, Asian American, Pacific Islander folks, and they're stripping local authority away. So that way their talking point can be, well, you see all these Democrat-run cities, they're run amok. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a state government that keeps stripping me of all my powers, so I can't help the communities I want to be in. Mm-hmm. Let's look at COVID again. Look at vaccinations. You saw predominantly suburban areas full of white folks be at the front of the line for vaccines. Meanwhile, our black neighborhoods were struggling to get those. That's state government. So we have to be very careful about how we talk about Democrats aren't really doing anything for black people. Look, we can always do better without a doubt, no doubt. But also, you know, government is layered. So it's not just as simple as electing a Democratic president, a Democratic Senate, a Democratic Congress, and oh, there we go. No. Mm-hmm. All politics is local. That's why it's really important to get involved in your local government, whether it's a governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, whether it's your city council, commissioner's court, school board, because that's where all of that change really makes, that's where all of those changes can really impact your life. And so that's why I look at the Lena Hidalgo and Greg Abbott situation is Lena was trying to protect black people. Meanwhile, Greg Abbott was trying to strip her of all of our powers, essentially not trying to protect black folks. And so that conversation is nuanced, and we really got to get on the street and tell folks, like, this is why this is happening. It's not as simple as Democrats are failing black people. It's just that we are handcuffed. You saw this with our voting rights, how they were trying to suppress the vote. You know, they passed a bill where they said there was a typo in it when it comes to souls to the polls, the only Sunday we got to vote.
Yeah.
And they were trying to limit the time. And I forgot what it was, but the typo was an a.m. and a p.m. And I always look at the keyboard because the A is far from the P. So I don't know how that was. There was a typo there, especially a bill. A bill that's trying to get into law. So we are going up against strong forces for a lot of folks who don't want to give up their power to people who don't look like them. We are working in institutions that were designed to work against us. And we have to keep remembering that, including both political parties. Like, let's keep it 100. These political parties were designed to work against us. So that's why we have to keep infiltrating it. We have to keep getting in these institutions and start tearing it down one by one so we can rebuild it back up so it can be equitable for all.
Gotcha. So I have some questions from a Republican because I feel like, you know, I wanted you to talk to Republicans because I feel like Democrats, you know,
they get the echo chambers.
So she's has some questions, and so I'm just going to ask a couple of them. So her first question is, you come from a Nigerian family which seemingly holds traditional family values. Nigerians in nature tend to be more conservative than liberal, considering the history of Democratic Party that hasn't been kind to Black Americans, the party of slavery, Confederacy, the party of KKK, the party of Jim Crow, the party of filibustered. That filibustered the Civil Rights Act, the party that actively wants to give more power to the government when it is clear more government power takes power away from the people and creates more problems. Why do you identify as a Democrat?
Well, I think that we have to stop bringing up old talking points of Democrats used to be X, Y, and Z, because what I look at now is the Republican Party, parts of it is now the party of Vladimir Putin. Mm-hmm. Part of it is the party of the KKK. Part of it is the party of segregationists now, nationalists. They're not the ones that are supporting Democrats now. And we've obviously seen a political shift in both parties, which is fair, but that's not what the reality of it is now. I also believe that I'm glad that you brought up my Nigerian ancestry. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's roots of traditionalism, of making sure that you're traditional, but also we also adapt with the times when it comes with our tradition as well, too. Mm-hmm. Whether it's religion, whether it's politics, whether it's the role of the man and the woman or whatever relationship you're in, those roles have changed because we understand that there's nuance to it. So we're not just living in the Stone Age. We understand that there's progressive and liberal values to live by now. And we understand that if we can live those values, it progresses us forward for, as my dad would say, our children's children and our children's children's children, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about progress for the next generation that's coming. And so we have to be very mindful of that. I don't just look at the Democratic Party for what it was. I understand the history. I know where it was at. But I look at for where it's now. And it gives us the best opportunity to make sure that everything is equitable. It's not perfect. Like I said, we're always striving for more perfection. Mm-hmm. But it is the party right now that's the most inclusive for Black people, for Nigerians, for Mexican Americans and Latinos, and for Asian American Pacific Islanders, and for LGBTQIA, and for anyone else who feels like they're in a disenfranchised marginalized group, our ADA folks, disability folks. We are all in this together, and the Democratic Party is the party of that. That's why it's frustrating sometimes to be a Democrat, right? Because you're talking to so many different types of people. We're the party of intersectionality to where our counterparts, you know, if we're being honest, it's just talking to white men, and you're just hoping that other people come along and say, oh, yeah, those are the ideals that I live for. Right. We've seen this shift happen with Donald Trump. We've seen this shift happen with Bush, with Ronald Reagan, with Richard Nixon. So we've seen it happen. And I like to remind folks that, you know, it's Democrats that, you know, voted in and passed. It was a Democratic president, Lyndon B. Johnson, who signed in the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act. Yeah. Yep. So if we're going to bring up history, let's bring all the history up, not just the history that came in the 1800s, mm-hmm. but the history that's as of recent that MLK fought for with a Democratic president.
Right. So her next question is one I think is, you know, when I hear a lot of Republicans speak, I feel like a lot of them vote the way they do based off of economics.
Yeah.
Right. So she says, given that Houston is arguably considered the energy capital of the world, or at least the USA, what's your stance on those who want to stop drilling for oil and stop the use of fossil fuels completely and put an end to big oil? That would effectively destroy millions of families and put a huge strain on the city. What is your environmental stance on those who want to put an end to big oil? And what are some policies you would put in place to make sure Houston leads on the energy sector?
Yeah, and that question sounds like national talking points. Mm-hmm. That's what I always chuckle about is mm-hmm. that, you know, in Texas, you can't talk national specifics. One of the things I always gripe about is that all the major media outlets are on the coast. So everyone in New York, you know, on the Boston, they get listened to. And then everyone on the West Coast, you know, everyone calls the left coast in San Francisco and California, they all get listened to.
Yeah.
Again, find me a Democrat who's saying stop drilling in Texas. Oil pays for pre-K in the state of Texas. A lot of people don't know that. Oil money pays for pre-K in the state of Texas.
Wow.
So you'd be foolish to say, hey, stop drilling for oil if you're a Democrat in Texas. Mm-hmm. We have to look at things geographically. Again, I haven't heard any Democrat here in the state of Texas. We even have a climate caucus in the state house. None of them say stop drilling. Oil is a major part of our economy here in Texas. Now, what I will say is also, do you know the state that is the leading producer in wind energy?
What's that?
Texas. So we can have both.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an either or. I think that this is the issue right now because of your, when you're listening to national talking points, they make it seem like it's, you can either have one or the other. That's simply not true. In fact, Shell, BP, Exxon, Valero, ask any of those oil companies. What they're expanding out to is trying to get to zero carbon emissions. They are trying to get into green space and be leaders in that. The reason I know that is because John Rosenthal, the state rep, he's a mechanical engineer for 25 plus years. He talks to them on a daily basis. We worked on bills to get this accomplished. And I actually believe that there was a bill passed that he joint authored with a gentleman from Marshall, Texas, about doing this. So you can have both. You can have wind, you can have solar, you can have all those wonderful things that are new ways and nuance, and you can still drill for oil because we still need it. So it's not an either or, you can have both. And we have to stop listening to the coast and these national talking points because Texas is different. You can't physically move Texas to the Midwest and now negate the Gulf of Mexico, because whatever state that you now decide to move in place of Texas, they're going to drill for oil too. So just like we are the lead, and I don't know if we are the leading producer of oil and gas, but I'd like to think we are. Just like, so I'm going to say, just like we're the leading producer of oil and gas, we're also the leading producer of wind energy. So we can have both. It's very doable.
Right. So two more questions from her. I feel like this question is not really party specific. It's just like a Houston citizen question, period. But she says, human trafficking is a huge problem being ignored by our media. Everyone can fall victim to it, and those who get trapped in it usually survive 2 to 3 years before they die or are discarded. Houston ranks number one in human trafficking as a Harris County official. What will you do to stop this, to help stop this?
Well, what I'll say is that I can't really do much from the Democratic Party, but what I can say is that I do know that our state reps, our state representatives, human trafficking is definitely a bipartisan issue. We know it's a big problem in the state of Texas, particularly in Houston, particularly in West Houston. Yeah. Again, that's where my
where
boss,
I live.
Yeah, that's where my boss is, is the state rep at. So it's a big issue out there in Katy, Cypress, for sure. And we recognize that. And I know that our sheriff's department is always working on it. They have task force. I know our county commissioner's court has a task force. I know our Houston City Council has a task force. You know, one of the things that is a great thing about Texas and Houston, you know, it's the fastest growing state. It's fastest growing city. And when you have that, you just have a lot of unincorporated areas that we're trying to play catch up with. And that's just the unfortunate part of just being just vastly growing at a rapid pace the way we are. And so I know there's plenty of task force, there's plenty of laws that are being looked at to make sure that we're addressing human trafficking, because that's not just a Democrat Republican issue. Everyone agrees that it's a problem, and we're trying to address it the best we can.
Right. So lastly, she says, Houston Independent School District is struggling and seeing a low percentage of good grades, short-staffed, full classrooms. What kind of changes would you implement to promote better education and more teachers?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I love that question, because the reality is that this is where I can get really hyper-partisan and blame Republicans. We can't keep trying to have teachers teach in a classroom when they're not being funded. Texas is 43rd in per pupil spending. That's awful. We are a state of 30 million people. There's no way we can say that we're looking towards the future, but we're not investing in the future. Our teachers don't get paid anything. They consistently ask for a pay raise, and they get shortchanged. We're not paying our teachers the way we're supposed to be paying our teachers. And that's because of inadequate state leadership when it comes to education. We're not putting money and resources into education. What we keep doing is we keep talking about spending money on a wall down in the border. Well, you know, we have to make sure that we are equitably spending money into our public school system. Governor Abbott is talking about a voucher program. A voucher program doesn't do anything. It doesn't increase funding for our public school. All you're doing is taking money and diverting those resources for our public schools and putting it into private schools.
Right.
So we have to do better in funding for our public education school system and making sure that those folks are being supported the way that they can. And Democrats have been doing that. And then HISD, we talk about the, again, stripping of local control. When the state is coming in and they're trying to dictate how school districts are supposed to spend this and spend that, it hurts them. And so that's where on the state level, we have to be better stewards of helping our ISDs locally and making sure that students are passing their tests. We also need to get rid of the STAR test. These standardized testings are not helping our students. You keep telling teachers to teach to a test instead of teaching to progress and seeing where they're at. And that's hurting our students as well, too. So we've got to adequately fund our public schools. We cannot, it can't be, I think it's 34 cents to a dollar right now in the state of Texas on what we spend on public education. We need that number to be more like 50 cents to the dollar of what we're spending on education. And you'll see retention rates be a lot better. And then also, too, again, with education, it ties into, like we talked about, poverty. Mm-hmm. When you can't keep talking about investing in education when you're not investing in affordable housing. You're not investing in education. I always say this. The three things that always come to my mind is a livable wage, expanding healthcare, and adequately funding our public education. The reason being is because particularly when you look at black and brown folks, especially if they're immigrants or they're in impoverished neighborhoods, if you can't be healthy, you can't go to work, you can't go to school. If your school isn't adequately funded, you can't have people working in the healthcare profession, and then you can't also allow them to go get a livable wage. And if they don't have a livable wage, they can't pay for the healthcare and they can't pay for the schooling.
Right.
So it all works in tandem. And so when you're not funding all of it is going to come down. When you're adequately funding all of it and you're increasing minimum wage to a livable wage, you're going to see better results.
Right. That's why I feel like Obama was great, obviously, but it was, I'm trying to figure out how to word this correctly, but it was like a catch-22 because now that we have a black, had a black president, it's like when you speak on things like systemic racism, it's like, dude, this guy became the president. Like, how can you speak on systemic racism when this guy, you know, but I was like, he's an anomaly. Right. And I'm not saying we can't, you know, overcome poverty. We can't, you know, succeed. We can't create generational wealth, even though we came from nothing. We are talking about why these roadblocks that we have to that. Yes, we can do it. It is possible. You can do it, but we shouldn't have to, you know, go overcome these roadblocks that a lot of other groups don't have to. So that's when we speak of systemic racism. These are things that's been in place literally since 1619 that's still affecting black and brown people today. But with this last time, I want to leave the time to you. I want you to speak to the citizens of Harris County and tell them what is on the line, what's at stake with this election. And
look, what's on the line is our freedom and our democracy. Mm-hmm. We can't go back. We cannot go back. You just talked about institutional racism and things that are working against us.
I'm glad you say that. I like that better than systemic. Institutional
racism. Yeah, it's institutional racism. Yes. We are in these different institutions that were breeded in rooted in racism. Mm-hmm. And we just cannot go back. We can't. We can't. Our democracy and our freedom is on the line. Anyone who saw what happened on January 6th at our nation's capital, you should know that our democracy is super fragile. They were able to get into the Speaker of the House, second in the line in succession to become the president. They were able to infiltrate her office. Mm-hmm. They had a noose outside for the vice president, who they supported but wanted him to overthrow the government. Yeah. This is what is on the line. We cannot go back. We've got to make sure that our people are voting. And actually, my message is more so to younger folks. We've got to make sure that we're voting to have a say into our future, because the decisions that are made today impact our future for tomorrow. Right. And that's what I think a lot of young folks don't understand is, oh, why should I get involved? Well, the reason you should get involved is because if we pick representatives now, they're not passing bills that take effect yesterday. They're passing bills that take effect tomorrow and 2 and 3 years from now that impacts us, that we have to pay taxes on. We have to do these different things. So if you want to live in a better world and you want to make sure that your future is safe, vote. You have to vote. You know, and I'm always telling folks, like, our future is on the line. It is so vitally important that we're out there dictating who represents us, so our future isn't lost. So we're not out in the abyss trying to figure out where did we go wrong, and then we look 20 years later and we say, "Oh man, it's because I didn't vote in that election, or I didn't get to pick the proper representation in that time." Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have to be very mindful of that and making sure that we're getting out the vote. So vote, vote, vote. Election day will be coming up. You can vote anywhere in Harris County. Obviously, my preference is that you vote for Democrats up and down the ballot, because they're the ones that are going to protect your future. They're going to protect your freedom, and they're the ones that are going to preserve democracy and making sure that your rights don't go back and we look forward.
Thank you, man, for coming on the show. You're very bright, very intelligent. And I actually love seeing you in the position you're in, because you're so young. And I feel like growing up, you know, the politicians, you know, that image we have of politicians and the image we actually had, we're old, like right. old. They're old, they're old, they're old. You're 30 years old. You're the chairman of the Harris County Democratic Party. And I love seeing young people, because I feel like you said, this our future.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're at an age, like now we're at an age where, you know, we're starting having kids. We're starting to, so I love seeing young people get involved in politics. The first time I really saw young people get involved was when Obama was running.
Right, right.
So I feel like we can shape the future of our country right. if we get involved. So it takes, just like you said, a student, a black student seeing a black teacher, right. you know, increases his chances of, right. you know, succeeding. A young person, I feel like seeing another young person in a position like you would do more to help us get involved. So thank you once again for coming on. And yeah, y'all go vote and vote. We're not trying to tell you who to vote for, what party to vote for. Just vote wherever you see fit. But do vote, because if you don't vote, you really can't have a say in how things are going.
That's right.
So with that, we are out, and we will see you next week. Peace.